listening to CKMS 102.7 FM in Warlow, Ontario, Radio Warlow.ca on the web. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative grant program and it's funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. You can access the recordings of this show on RadioWarlow.ca/news or on the National Local Journalism Initiative website. I'm your host, Ivan Angelovsky. Over 250 organizations and over 3,000 individuals across Canada have signed on to Choosing Real Safety, a historic declaration to divest from policing and prisons and build safer communities for all. Signatories include Unifor and a wide array of human rights and racial justice organizations across Canada who talked at the recent online conference presenting the declaration. This is Christine Macklin from Unifor.
Labor is what we all have. We all need to go to work to provide for our families the basic needs. And when we talk about labor, we have to understand that the labor movement itself actually was created from injustices that were happening to workers that were definitely grounded in the capitalist theories of discrimination, racism, and all of inequalities. So I think it is essential that unions and labor, whether unionized or non, speak in solidarity of this declaration, because this is about injustices. When we talk about people, I know that lots of people are getting lost in the words of defund, divest, you know, reallocation. But let's come back to what the root cause is. It's the injustice to people, living beings that are treated differently because it generates capital. So how can labor not do more than just signing a statement? How can we not push for more justice within our communities? How can we not understand that policing, which many of us advocate for workers' rights and face police on when we're opposing employers that are attacking health and safety, which I will come back to, you know, benefits, fair pay, fair wages. Right now, we're advocating for paid sick days for the very same people based on gender, identity, and race. You know, I think that people need to stop worrying about the words and start seeing people and not seeing people as other and blaming people that are criminalized for a system that was created broken. People that are criminalized, and from my past experience working through corrections, I understand that there is huge faults in that system that criminalize people because of poverty. Majority of people that are incarcerated, that are over-policed, it is directly related to poverty. And once they are criminalized, how can they come out of a life of poverty when they're denied opportunities, denied access to fair, good-paying employment? As a Black woman, when I walk outside my workplace, my health and safety is still compromised. So how can we not talk about the health and safety of people outside of workplaces and demand justice? Racism is a tool used by capitalism to generate capital, like corrections is used to generate capital, like police will defend employers that are doing wrong to workers, that are doing wrong to people, that are doing wrong to communities because of their race, their gender, and their identity.
The latest call to take the money that goes to policing and reallocate it to other services came after the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, which sparked a series of protests across the globe. This is Robin Maynard of Abolition Coalition.
This past spring and summer, historic Black-led protests, we saw a groundswell of support for Black Lives Matter, as well as the hashtag and movement Defund the Police, representing a sea change in public understandings of policing and a broader call to reimagine safety without reliance on police, jails, immigration detention, and prison. This is ongoing today as we celebrate the launch of a historic declaration signed by over 3,000 individuals and over 250 organizations, collectively representing hundreds of thousands of members, including the Canadian Union for Postal Workers, who have 54,000 members, and Unifor representing 300,000 members, as well as Black and Indigenous organizations, harm reduction organizations, and legal organizations. We're seeing an ongoing push across cities to defund the police in cities like Toronto and Hamilton and Montreal, as well as pushes to remove SROs from schools, successful in Peel, Hamilton, with ongoing struggles in Vancouver and Edmonton.
Organization which led the protest last summer and which is the leading voice behind the call to reallocate the police funds is Black Lives Matter. This is Raven Vinks of Black Lives Matter Toronto.
Police grew out of slave patrols. The RCMP was created to displace Indigenous peoples for colonizers and settlers, specifically to protect property and to ensure that the resources that were once readily available would be seized and used for profit. Policing is tied into the fabric of our current realities and is a continuation of these colonial efforts of erasure and genocide. Punishment is often the tool used when wanting to correct behavior. This is a white supremacist tool of control. And Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities deserve better. We deserve our lives. Black people know all too well the impacts of over-policing. No one's life should be taken within 21 seconds of the police showing up for a wellness check. It is in the everyday life of Black people that we need more care, not more police. Our communities are overrun with police presence. Therefore, our interactions with the police are at an increased rate, and we are dying. People have died, and it's efforts like this declaration that is needed right now, real tangible solutions to the pandemic that is the police in Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities. We know that the majority of calls placed 911 are those where people are behaving in an unstable manner. We don't need police officers pretending to be real-life Batmans to storm in and escalate situations that could have been handled by actual professionals in de-escalation and mental wellness strategies. We need MAD leadership. And actually, MAD community folks have already developed ways of taking care of one another. Police don't actually help in crisis. Police don't help resolve harm once it's been done. And they don't de-escalate harm or stop conflict. They definitely are not held accountable for misconduct, racism, anti-Black racism, and murder. And in terms of justice, when someone is sent to prison, does it in any way solve the harm that happened? No. Do people who cause serious harm like sexual assault or white supremacist violence or mass murder go to prison? Not often, actually. So who is filling these spaces? Drug users, poor people, Black and Indigenous people, mad people, disabled people, sex workers, and trans women. The prisons are full of people thinking through the harm they've done, but often most people inside haven't done harm. They have owed money or used drugs or been criminalized through the daily act of living. So in a world without prisons, those people would be home with us, cared for. We would be able to resolve conflict, harm, and crisis in ways that included all involved and was rooted in social justice and liberatory frameworks. We need to reinvest in our communities to ensure that we are building communities rooted in actual safety. And by reallocating funds into services that we know provide safety and care, we actively leave behind carceral logic and punitive resolutions that leave people forgotten and in worst cases murdered by the police. Safety is all of our responsibility, and by divesting from the false claims of safety and security by police institutions and oversight bodies, such as the SIU, we are doing the work of our ancestors and elders, love work, justice work. Do not forget that Black Lives Matter movement began as a love letter to all Black people and a commitment to ensure that that affirmation will be more than just a distant future dream. It is our job to continue our ancestors' unfinished project of abolition. If we allow history to show us there's a continuum from land theft and slavery to our current conditions where specific groups of massive amounts of people are criminalized based on race, economics, ability, it's all by design, and something else can be and should be created. What we stand for and what the Declaration has spelled out is clear, and it is a clear outline of where we need to go.
Across Canada, calls to defund the police were backed by organizations that support Indigenous rights. This is Molly Swain of the Indigenous-led organization Freelance Free People.
Defunding and dismantling the police, prisons, child and family services, immigration detention, and all other attendant carceral institutions is crucial to addressing colonial and racial oppression in the Prairie Provinces and across so-called Canada. These institutions have been a central tactic used by the state to remove Indigenous peoples from our lands and communities, to disrupt our relational networks and responsibilities as sovereign peoples, and to undermine our nations. These institutions work to contain our kin, to maintain white repression of indigenous resistance to colonization, to clear the land for white settlement and access to our lands and resources, and to strip us of our rights and sovereignty. The Prairie provinces see some of the highest incarceration rates in the country, with Saskatchewan and Manitoba having well over twice the national average of incarcerated people per capita, and with Indigenous people making up 3/4 of those incarcerated. The penal system continues the process of settler colonial genocide through the violences of incarceration, police brutality, active disregard for Indigenous health and well-being, and the removal of our people from the land. Perhaps most importantly, it's this building of alternatives to the penal system and building alternatives that foreground Indigenous sovereignty and life ways that's really essential to transforming the relationship between so-called Canada and Indigenous peoples. Our laws and justice traditions continue to exist and guide us in how to be good relations to our human and other than human kin and to the lands, waters, and air. As Indigenous people, we can both imagine and remember otherwise, the other ways of relating to one another as individuals and communities. Abolition is fundamental to repairing the violences of colonialism and racism, to addressing the intertwined and constitutive systems of anti-Blackness and anti-Indigenous racism, as well as ableism, cis-heterosupremacy, and poverty, among other systems.
After witnessing too many situations in which racialized people suffered because of police violence, a group of medical workers started the organization Doctors for Defunding Police. This is Nanki Rai.
Over 90% of my clinical practice is with people experiencing mental health issues and disabilities, and it is not a coincidence that over 90% of the individuals within my clinical practice have also experienced harms from policing, incarceration, and from so-called protective state agencies like Children's Aid Society and Canadian Border Service Agency. Just as anti-Indigenous and anti-Black racism is ubiquitous within society and all mainstream institutions in Canada, our healthcare system is founded on the violence of settler colonialism and racial capitalism. Healthcare workers continue to work in concert with police services, especially as it relates to mental health crises, to incarcerate people. Violence of police and prisons doesn't just come in the form of lethal force used against people experiencing distress. The harm and death facing BIPOC communities is actually baked into the very fabric of prisons and policing. When the mere threat of violence from police presence exacerbates someone's mental health distress, leading people not to reach out for help out of fear that someone may call 911, the resulting harm is a direct result of policing and prisons. Every time someone suffers a medical emergency and declines going to the emergency room because it would necessitate police or security interaction and potential dehumanization, the resulting harm isn't just from that witness fall or potential heart attack or other injuries, it's the direct result of carceral violence. As a healthcare worker, I can no longer sit idly by and just cast up broken bones or treat pain and infections with medications or try to find affordable and accessible trauma-informed therapy, which is a near impossibility, and continue looking into the eyes of survivors who retell their stories and share their grief, while the root cause of structural violence continues to erode away entire communities. Policing and prisons threaten the health and safety of people and their communities. No medical intervention can ever undo the violence of batons, guns, and cages, and we cannot police our way out of systemic racism and poverty. Real safety requires the reallocation of funds towards long-term free and affordable housing for all, access to free and healthy foods, clean water, community gardens, free public transit, paid sick leave, dignified wages and benefits, free childcare and post-secondary education, and healthcare rooted in the principles of nothing about us without us. Real safety requires the upholding of Indigenous sovereignty, land back, and collective self-determination for all. Defund, dismantle, and build. That is how we achieve real safety.
The Criminalization and Punishment Education Project, CPEP, started by students and professors at Carleton University and the University of Ottawa, has criticized the police and prison system in Canada for a long time and has also joined the declaration. This is Ohel Ben Salima.
Why do we have to allow this dehumanization to happen in front of us without collectively doing something meaningful about it? Why do we allow jails, prisons, and other carceral systems to kill our loved ones, to kill community members that if they were outside, like comrades said earlier, would be able to care for them. For our communities, the historic declaration to divest from policing and prisons is important because it is not only an indictment of the current systems that keep their boots on our necks, not allowing us to breathe, survive, and strive, but it is also an urgent call to tell us that we can do better, as it outlines straightforward steps and draws a roadmap that, if followed meaningfully and effectively, can ensure that we transition justly from injustice systems towards abolitionist futures when we can relate to each other in transformative ways, mutually supporting each other instead of punishing and breaking each other. The declaration is particularly important to me and my communities and the communities I work in solidarity with, because we bear the brunt of punishment, apartheid, and torture. Because abolition for us is not an option, but it is a necessity to end the suffering we go through. Because the state proves time and time again that they are not invested in promoting life. Rather, they are invested in maintaining a system of racial and economic and other dominations under the disguise of public safety. Because it connects our struggles and bolsters the bridges that already exist between us. Abolitionist futures are impossible if unions keep organizing to protect our killers, if the youth in our communities are kidnapped by the child apprehension systems, while we don't even have enough to feed ourselves, while scarcity is created by capitalism, while in fact, abundance is a reality that is kept away from us by these oppressive structures.
The declaration got support from the British Columbia Civil Liberties Association. Founded in 1962, it is Canada's oldest civil liberties organization. This is Harsha Walia.
For far too long, we know that here in this country, successive governments have been managing and controlling and criminalizing racial segregation, racial genocide, and mass inequality through structures of criminalization, including punitive laws and more police and more prisons and more detention centers. Every year, we see the budgets of these kinds of agencies grow and grow. The founding of the Northwest Mounted Police here in these lands was precisely to protect settler and colonial interests against Indigenous and Black communities. That was the cause, that was the reason of the foundation of the police, and that continues today. The BC Civil Liberties Association is a legal organization. We're a fairly mainstream legal organization that has spent decades using the law as a tool against the violence of police and prisons and immigration detention centers. For decades, we have tried to fight for police accountability and oversight bodies, only to see more resources going into false techno solutions like police-borne body cameras, or ineffective police oversight bodies that are stacked with former police officers, even though these bodies are supposed to be civilian. Today in Canada, over 60% of all independent police investigative bodies are former police officers. So when people are filing complaints, thinking that they are going to get an impartial, independent, civilian oversight body, 67% of those investigative officers that are supposed to be civilian are actually former cops and overwhelmingly white. Every attempt at police reform has only meant more money into policing. We now see police officers using deadly force, conducting fatal wellness checks against Chantal Moore, Ijaz Ahmed, Regis Korchinski Paquette, and countless others. Right now, we're in the midst of many, many, many overlapping crises on these lands and in this country, crises that are manufactured. The COVID pandemic is real, but the inequalities and the disproportionate impacts and fault lines of who experiences COVID pandemic in the most acute ways is manufactured. The opioid crisis and the crisis of lack of safe supply, the long arc of anti-Black and anti-Indigenous genocide, these are all overlapping crises. And on top of that, we have the ongoing carceral crisis. So calling for dismantling and defunding is fundamentally a call for care and safety. We absolutely must de-link carceral systems and criminalizing systems from safety. These systems do not keep us safe. They do not keep our comrades and our community members safe.
You've been listening to CKMS Newsroom at 102.7 FM about the Choosing Real Safety, a historic declaration to divest from policing in prisons and build safer communities for all. If you want to get involved, you can go to www.choosingrealsafety.com and support the declaration. Check out the archived versions of this program and other episodes on radiowarloo.ca/news. You can follow us on Twitter at Radio Warloo, and you can email news@radiowarloo.ca to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover. The music was Black Room by Moby, thanks to MobyGratis.com. My name is Ivan Angelovsky, and I was your host for this program.